This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, France's president promises to crush Islamic State. President Obama vows to step up the fight against the IS group with no change in strategy. El Nino readies to slam the world.
We are in uncharted territory because some of the impact are interfering with the impact of climate change. But there's a lot of research going on.
The great American bison beefs up the grasslands. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. French President François Hollande vowed to destroy the Islamic State group following last Friday's terrorist attacks around Paris. President Hollande says he will meet with President Obama and Russian leader Vladimir Putin this week. We begin our coverage with Lisa Bryant in Paris.
Les actes commis vendredi soir à Paris et près du Stade de France sont des actes de guerre.
Speaking at a rare joint session of Parliament, French President François Hollande called for tighter European border controls and new powers to expel people deemed a national security threat. He described a state of war against the Islamic State group, which has taken responsibility for attacks that killed at least 129 people Friday in Paris. Hollande said the attacks had been planned in Syria, organized in Belgium, and perpetrated on French soil with French help. He vowed to intensify airstrikes against ISIS. France launched several strikes against ISIS targets in the Syrian city of Raqqa Sunday night. The president's speech capped a day of fast-moving events as Belgium authorities charged two people arrested following Friday's bloodbath in Paris and French police raided dozens of places around the country. French authorities believe 27-year-old Belgian Abdelhamid Abaoud, who fought in Syria, masterminded the Paris attacks. A manhunt is still underway for 26-year-old Salah Abdeslam, who is believed to have helped carry out the attacks. Meanwhile, millions of French and other Europeans marked a minute of silence on Monday for the victims of the attacks. Pierre Molfoulade was among a crowd that gathered at the Place de la République in central Paris. Friends of his had died in the attack.
Pas de la rancune, je pense que c'est...
He said he did not feel bitter. The attackers were in their 20s, his own age, and had probably been brainwashed. Many French Muslims were also at the square. Faisal Wertani, who also knew victims in the attacks, said it is important to mark a time of solidarity in France and to show Muslims are not terrorists. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry landed in Paris Monday under heavy security and expressed solidarity with France.
Don't mistake what these attacks represent. This is not a clash of civilizations. These terrorists have declared war against all civilization.
Stringent security measures were in effect when Secretary Kerry arrived in the French capital after dark Monday. Journalists were barred from accompanying him. President Obama says it would be a mistake to deploy ground forces to defeat Islamic State militants, resisting calls at home and abroad for a more forceful U.S. strategy in the wake of Friday's terrorist attacks in Paris. Capping the two-day G20 summit in Turkey, Mr. Obama called the Islamic State terrorist group the face of evil and said there would be an intensification of efforts, but not a new strategy.
The strategy that we are putting forward is the strategy that ultimately is going to work. But as I said from the start, it's going to take time.
Mr. Obama said the Paris attacks were a terrible and sickening setback in the fight against Islamic State, but he ruled out deploying large numbers of U.S. ground troops, insisting it was not a sustainable strategy. A new video attributed to the Islamic State is warning of a Paris-style attack on Washington. The video, appearing on social media Monday, threatened all countries involved in military operations against the militant group, saying they will suffer the same fate as France. The person speaking in the video specifically singled out the U.S. capital city. VOA cannot independently verify the authenticity of the video. U.S. law enforcement authorities maintain there is no specific or credible threat to the United States. International Edition's Jim Stevenson spoke with Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb, who says there is growing concern.
A lot of people are worried, could this actually happen in Washington? And And the answer is no one can know for certain, but everybody is on high alert. And people are trying to decide now, is President Obama's strategy the right one? Is he hitting the Islamic State hard enough? And as you heard him at the G20 today, he says, absolutely, the strategy is right. We're going to keep going with this strategy.
What are some of the elements of this strategy that President Obama has laid out?
President Obama wants to have more intelligence sharing with allies that includes France. There was an agreement signed between the United States and France. He's also been ramping up the airstrikes on the Islamic State. There have been hundreds over the past week, and they're focusing on different areas to help the allies on the ground. President Obama still believes that this is not the United States fight. He says that the United States could come in, clear the Islamic State out of Raqqa, but what good would that do? Who's going to be there to take over and rebuild? It has to be the people that are there on the ground. And so in the meantime, he's getting a lot of criticism from people saying that he's not doing enough. But the Pentagon is talking and pointing at the recent victories. They said there have been major victories in Al-Hol with the Syrian Arab coalition up in Syria, and then in Sinjar by the Kurdish Peshmerga, which has been helped by Iraqi security forces in the air in Iraq.
Certainly, this is going to be an ongoing campaign. How about cooperation? Are they getting a lot of cooperation now from other countries?
Well, we asked at the Pentagon about France because the United States has only been releasing the coalition strikes, and they'll tell you the numbers that are the United States, but then they don't tell anybody else's. So we were curious if France had been the number two contributor. They said they wouldn't say that, but they said that France is an important ally. And as you could see with the increased airstrikes that they did in Raqqa, they're going to be stepping in more and more into the fight.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bav speaking with International Edition's Jim Stevenson. Benjamin Haddad is a research fellow and European analyst with the Washington-based Hudson Institute. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, Europe has become the new front in the Syrian civil war.
We've seen this already with the flow of refugees that were fleeing the conflict in Syria. And now what happened in Paris is a new consequence of the situation in the Middle East. And we still need to have more information about the origins and the training. It appears that one of the terrorists who have been identified by the French police as a French citizen was trained in Syria in the winter of 2013-2014, and that this operation might have been planned from Syrian territory with the leadership of ISIS to expand the front in Europe.
With the migrant crisis now in full flower in Europe, what is it going to do for those who are trying to welcome these refugees and migrants?
There is a risk of a political backlash against the refugees, which I think would be very troubling because it would represent, I think, a real confusion with what is going on. A lot of these people are fleeing repression. They're fleeing exactly what's been happening in Paris in recent days: violence, terrorism, radicalism. There's been a Syrian passport that apparently belonged to a refugee that's been found next to the body of one of the suicide bombers. It's still very unclear at this point if this is a real passport or not. And there is a risk of rising populism and xenophobia in Europe after these attacks. And I think this is something that European leadership should be very vigilant.
You know, French jets went after IS headquarters in Raqqa in Syria. Will there be a newfound unity in fighting Islamic State?
I mean, it's true that the French authorities privately say that they consider that the United States has taken the back seat on everything that's been going on in Syria. The French have had a very strong position on the ouster of Assad as the only possible solution to the Syrian crisis from the start. Strikes in Syria to prevent potential terrorist attacks against the French territory already this summer. But I think now there's going to be a willingness from European countries and hopefully from the United States to ramp up the fight against ISIS in Syrian territory. The risk, if the U.S. doesn't take the lead on this, is that European leaders will be more and more pressured to side with Russia, which appears to offer the only solution, which would be a catastrophe both for the transatlantic relation, but also for the situation in Syria, where saving Assad cannot possibly be a political solution to what's happening. I mean, that's the only offer and alternative that the Russians offer.
Well, Ben, of course, France has imposed a state of emergency, apparently the first in many decades. Has France turned a page in the fight against terrorism with this attack in Paris?
It certainly is a new phase of the war on terrorism in France. Now, this isn't new for the last few years, especially with the question of French citizens going to fight alongside jihadists in Syria. The French have ramped up intelligence services, more and more money, means, and recruitment have been focused on intelligence and security services in France. Obviously, we had the Charlie Hebdo attacks just 10 months ago. So this has been a concern of French authorities recently. But I think now, clearly, this has become the defining issue of the Hollande presidency.
That's Benjamin Haddad, research fellow at the Hudson Institute, speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. Investigators are increasingly trying to figure out how the terrorists in Paris were able to communicate and coordinate the assaults. Now, a number of investigators are pointing the finger at an unlikely target, an electronic gaming system made by Sony. International Edition's Doug Bernard covers cyber issues for us and spoke with International Edition's Sarah Williams about the possibility.
First off, before one discounts it, because it seems like sort of a nutty idea almost, consider that as recently as 2013, in documents that were leaked by Edward Snowden, the NSA was already, and the CIA, were already looking at these gaming platforms as a way to that terrorists were using to communicate with each other. Now, let's take a quick look at PS4, which has directly been implicated. It stands for PlayStation 4. It's manufactured by Sony. And it has about 110 million users around the world. Now, what happens when, for those not familiar with these gaming consoles, they're all connected via the Sony network, basically via the internet. They all can kind of connect with each other. So you can play games with people who are sitting next to you on the couch or maybe, you know, 1,000 miles away, all in real time. So these devices are built as a means to connect. It's just that for a long time, I think people have been thinking about, well, my emails are being monitored, my cell phone might be monitored. But these systems are very, very difficult to monitor.
Why are they so difficult to monitor?
Well, first off, you can communicate several different ways. You can send each other text messages, if you want, over this PlayStation network. And it is not known, actually, if the NSA or CIA or other intelligence services actually know how to penetrate this unique Sony network to monitor text communications. But that would probably be the easiest thing to monitor. Consider, however, that when you're playing a game, you can talk with people live. So you and I could be separated by hundreds and hundreds of miles, and yet we would be able to talk with each other live in the game. All those communications are what they call voice over internet protocol, VoIP. And basically, those are all encrypted communications. So even if you could break into the system, you couldn't actually monitor what those live, you know, real-time conversations were. There's one other way that people could communicate. You're doing things in these games, right? Well, let's say you and maybe two or three other people are playing a game, and you have your character go and write something on a wall, say, for example, which is, you know, a communication about, say, maybe planning an attack or something. Well, game to game, that text just simply vanishes. So you and the people playing the game could communicate instantly, and yet any evidence of it would just simply vanish.
So there's no record?
There's no record.
Wow, that's amazing.
VOA's Doug Bernard speaking with my colleague Sarah Williams. Social media is buzzing with what U.S. government officials are tweeting in response to the Paris attacks. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here with details. Hi, G.
Hi, Ray.
So what's happening?
More than a dozen state governors announced they will close the doors to Syrian refugees. The decision is, of course, out of fear that violent extremists might enter their state while posing as refugees. Let's hear from a few of them. Texas Governor Greg Abbott tweeted he sent a letter to President Obama. His tweet reads like this. My letter to POTUS. Texas will not accept any Syrian refugees in the wake of the Paris attacks. He's on Twitter at GOV Abbott. Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana and one of the Republican presidential hopefuls, tweeted this. I just signed an executive order instructing state agencies to take all available steps to stop the relocation of Syrian refugees to L.A. His handle is at Bobby Jindal. Governor of Ohio, John Kasich, tweeted, The security of Americans must come first. He's on Twitter at John Kasich.
Gee, it appears mostly Republican governors are going this way. Is that right?
Exactly. There's only one Democratic governor who supports stopping the flow of refugees to the U.S. That's Governor Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire, but she hasn't tweeted about it yet. So to sum it up, governors of Illinois, Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, New Hampshire, Arizona, Indiana, Massachusetts, Louisiana, Michigan, Alabama, Texas, Georgia, and Arkansas are in support of not accepting refugees from Syria.
That's a mouthful, but mm-hmm. you did that well. what is the response from the White House?
President Obama doesn't support the governor's decisions and believes Washington should remain open to accepting the refugees. The White House shared a clip of POTUS speaking during the G20 summit in Turkey. President Obama said, "We do not close our hearts to these victims of such violence." He also said, "Slamming the door in their face would be a betrayal of our values." While some people commented they're proud of his decision, one Twitter user wrote, "He's working awfully hard to place American lives in jeopardy on our home front." Ray, judging by the comments on Twitter, more people are critical of the president on this issue than not.
Thanks, G. She tweets for our International Edition Twitter account at @VOA_IE. And you can also follow G on her own account at G Abby Lee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. El Nino is on the way, and boy, will it be making an impact. The World Meteorological Organization says it expects this will be one of the three strongest ever recorded since 1950. As we hear from Lisa Schlein at WMO headquarters in Geneva, the weather phenomenon is likely to strengthen further in the next few months.
El Niño results from the complex interaction between the Pacific Ocean and the atmosphere. El Niño years normally are significantly warmer than non-El Niño years, a premise supported by the first 10 months of this year, which were the warmest on record. Despite this significant warming trend, WMO Secretary General Michel Jarraud says no link yet has been established between El Niño and climate change.
We are in uncharted territory because some of the impact are interfering with the impact of climate change. But there's a lot of research going on, but right at this stage, we cannot say yet whether climate change will mean more frequent or more instant El Niño.
Models suggest the peak three-month average surface water temperatures in the east-central tropical Pacific Ocean will exceed 2 degrees Celsius above average. This would place this El Niño event among the three strongest previous events since 1950. Jarraud says no two El Niños are identical, although the exposure of coral reefs to ocean conditions can cause bleaching. He says this can already be seen in the United States and is expected to hit Australia's Great Barrier Reef in early 2016. He says El Niño also causes extreme weather events, including an increase in tropical cyclones in the Pacific and the opposite effect in the Atlantic, where fewer hurricanes are expected. He says intense flooding will occur in some areas, offset by increased drought in others. For example, he notes in eastern Africa, El Niño is increasing increasing rainfall in the equatorial sector of the Great Horn of Africa and drought conditions in southern Africa. No one can predict what will happen during the current El Nino season, but WMO Secretary General Jarreau says the impact in lost lives and property damage is likely to be much less because of improved forecasting and preparation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still to come, grazing the great American grasslands. This is VOA.
This is Greenbeat for a healthier planet.
Green describes the color of the walls of an apartment in Sweden as well as its environmental impact. The apartment building in Malmo has a rooftop turbine as well as solar panels, substantially reducing its carbon footprint. Residents like Peter Byrne also lower energy costs with the use of a monitoring app.
This I could follow what things in the apartment that actually drives the energy usage.
The building was developed by Nordic energy supplier E.ON as a testing ground for smart home technologies. Within its walls is an energy management system for renewables such as solar, wind, and biogas. Here's Pierre Rosen, the building's project manager.
In the future, I believe that households will have a lot more information about how they use their energy and how it affects the environment.
The building is just one part of a commitment to a greener lifestyle by the entire city of Malmo, which aims to be climate neutral by 2030. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
This is VOA's International Edition. Grasslands cover one-third of the Earth's surface. Depending where in the world you are, they are called savanna, prairie, steppes, or the plains. Their vitality depends on how they are grazed. Too much grazing can lead to desertification, but too little can do the same thing. The right amount helps grasslands thrive. In the Great Plains of the United States, a growing number of conservation groups partner with ranchers to promote healthier grass and more profit for the cattlemen. Shelley Schlender has more from Valentine, Nebraska.
Native grasses rustle in the wind, and they're the mainstay of Nebraska's Niobrara Valley, a national scenic waterway lined with thick stands of birch and pine.
The habitat diversity here is really pretty incredible. This refuge has so many different types of habitats that converge here.
Steve Hicks manages the Niobrara Wildlife Refuge for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, whose mission is to protect native plants and animals. The grassland habitat is home to songbirds, the greater American prairie chicken, prairie dogs, elk, deer, and American bison.
The bison are part of our purpose here at Fort Niobrara Refuge, and we're supposed to provide a good habitat for them.
3 centuries ago, 20 million bison thundered over prairies that covered the entire Midwest. In tightly packed mobs, the herds traveled thousands of kilometers every year, fleeing predators and seeking greener pastures. Their grazing stimulated plant vitality. Their dung provided fertilizer, and because they moved on fast, the bitten plants had time to recover.
This land does really well under a grazing regime.
Today, America's 30,000 remaining wild bison live mostly within enclosures that keep them off private land. Fort Niobrara maintains a herd of 350 on 9,000 hectares, and Hicks says it's challenging to fence them in.
Bison are manageable, but it's a lot bigger job to keep bison contained than it is cattle. They'll go just about where they want, if they really want to.
To provide the benefits of grazing without the hassle of herding bison, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service leases 25,000 hectares to cattle ranchers. Today's a moving day for 500 cows and their bright-eyed calves. Bob Graber and a couple of other stockmen race around the herd on dune buggies, coaxing and chasing the animals out of a 200-hectare fenced pasture where they've only been grazing for half a week.
The refuge sets it up and gives you what pastures you will be in and how many days you're in each pasture.
The refuge asks them to mimic the historic grazing of wild bison, so Graber's team moves their herd over hill after hill of native prairie to another fenced pasture that hasn't been grazed for 3 years. Then they head home to their 1,200-hectare Rocking Arrow Ranch. Sitting at the kitchen table, Graber's son, Dean Churchill, says that by leasing summer pastures from the refuge, they can raise more cows, around 900. Like the refuge, they never graze a pasture continuously, but instead of moving a herd after a few days, they often let them graze over 2 weeks. And instead of resting a pasture for years, they often bring cattle back within a few months. With proper planning, Churchill says this more intensive schedule improves the grass.
Absolutely, yes. It adds compaction to the soil. The footprints within the soil allows the moisture to penetrate the soil better.
Churchill says he learned these techniques 20 years ago from Alan Savory, who advocates holistic planned grazing. Today, the Savory Institute trains ranchers around the globe to use holistic planned grazing to achieve their social and economic priorities. Savory Institute's Byron Shelton says a key is when to move animals on and off of grass.
Once it's bitten, no matter how far down it's eaten, if it starts to regrow, we move the animals away until it has regrown. And that way we have the roots being the strongest they can to hold soil, hold water, make the ecosystem function.
Those ideas make sense to the Nature Conservancy, who is partnering with the Savory Institute. Colorado Grasslands Program Director William Burnage says that in a 3-year trial on the Fox Ranch, they're grazing more cattle and creating more diverse habitat.
The Colorado Parks and Wildlife Agency is very pleased with the outcomes that we're achieving at the Fox Ranch for the greater prairie chicken. And at the same time, we've improved the financial outcomes for ourselves and for our lessee at the ranch. And his quality of life, I think, has credibly improved.
Burnage says the knowledge being gained may give livestock around the world a sustainable place to graze, benefiting people, profit, and the planet. For VOA News, I'm Shelley Schlender in the native grasslands of the Great Plains.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. More news, features, videos, and podcasts, all yours at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The American people stand in solidarity with the people of France in the wake of the recent and tragic terror attack in Paris. 129 people were killed in a string of coordinated assaults across the city Friday evening. U.S. President Barack Obama called the attacks an outrageous attempt to terrorize innocent civilians.
This is an attack not just on Paris. It's an attack not just on the people of France, but this is an attack on all of humanity and the universal values that we share.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry echoed the president's remarks, noting these are heinous, evil, vile acts. Those of us who can must do everything in our power to fight back against what can only be considered an assault on our common humanity. France is our oldest ally, said President Obama. The French people have stood shoulder to shoulder with the United States time and again. President Obama noted that the American people draw strength from the French people's commitment to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
Now, we want to be very clear that we stand together with them in the fight against terrorism and extremism. We're going to do whatever it takes to work with the French people and with nations around the world to bring these terrorists to justice and to go after any terrorist networks that go after our people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.